episode 74 of the Furlough Bros Tech Podcast. Today is February the 23rd, 2012. I am Matthew Dean Furlough, and this is my futuristic brother, James Furlough.
You know, I'm pretty sure that we should name this episode the Google Tech Podcast. I have a feeling that's what we're going to talk about all week, or all, you know, which... all show, because that was pretty much dominated the news all week, and yeah, we're going to have trouble fitting it all in. Can you hear that dog barking in the background?
Yes, a little bit.
Okay, so we are, we're trying out a service, dogvacay.com, and where what you do is you open up your home to other dogs. It's similar like Airbnb, but for pets. So we have a dog staying with us right now. And he wants in on the podcast.
So. Understandably. You see, because Vinny doesn't bark, right?
Not really. Unless there's someone coming by, in which case he will defend his turf to the death and until the door opens up and then he's, you know, all cool. But, yeah, so that's not Vinny. That's another dog.
Well, so we're going to have
every time you hear a bark, think dogvacay.com.
Oh, yeah, nice. And they're not even paying us for that.
They're paying me to watch that dog, so...
No, that's a good point.
Cool. I'll give him some love.
So I have to put up with it. I want to cut. we're going to have some debate on the title of the show, I can tell you right now.
Fair enough.
Because this week was a weird week. This week was like a... We're not going to worry about what happens in the next year. We're going to worry about what happens in the next five. Like, all week, all news.
Yeah, which is going to be trouble for us, because we actually do have to stop at 8:30. And this could easily be a three-hour show.
Yeah, 9:30?
Yeah, that's what I meant.
Okay, thank you. It's like, yeah, because we're not going to fit it into an hour.
Just testing. See, okay. I'm setting your expectations. So you're going to aim for an hour, and I know we're going to overshoot. So,
we might finish it in 2.5 then.
Yeah, exactly.
Well, this week, like every week, we will be talking about technology and the continuing corporate opera, maybe a little bit emphasis on the Google and the future. But by corporate opera, we, of course, mean the soap opera of corporations' dealings back and forth, the people working for them, their marketing campaigns, and our favorite, the technology they are developing. Before we get into the heart of the show, James has a quick disclosure that he has to go through.
Yes, I work for Hewlett-Packard. However, I do not represent HP or any of HP's opinions during this podcast.
Cool. Sometimes I claim to represent them because I have really good opinions, but HP doesn't listen to me. if you want to follow us throughout the week, you can go to our Twitter account. My Twitter handle is at Matthew D. Furlough.
And I am at James Furlough.
Cool. The show is at Furlough Bros, but if you want to get all this information and so much more, we do post all of the links and clicks and videos and sound bites and everything for the show to furloughbros.com. There's cool graphics, there's scrolling, there's hyperlinking, there's all sorts of awesome stuff, man. Check it out. And did you know this? That you don't have to listen to the entire show if you don't want to. If you're like, wow, you guys talk for an incredibly long time. I can't stand it. Well, we have a solution for you. We break this show into nice little clips, a couple minutes here and there, brings everything down to bite-sized pieces. If you don't want the whole chicken barbecued, slathered with barbecue sauce and a side of coleslaw, you can get just the wing, or just the leg, or just the breast, whatever you want.
Some dark meat. I got you.
Exactly. so you can go and check out different subscriptions for your podcast. You can get whichever feed you want. It's fancy dancy. Every week we ask, you know, if you like this show, if you find it entertaining and enthralling and amazing and delightful, please tell a friend and just let them know, because we like to do this and we like to share it with as many people as we can. So, yeah.
So,
dealio, yo.
I feel like people have been telling their friends since subscribers are going up. So maybe we should switch that to saying, hey, thank you for telling your friends. We really appreciate it.
You know what? And yeah, honestly, thank you for, you know, we'll tell you the next 5 weeks, we will give you 3% of all profits that Furlough Bro Shows makes for every person you sign up. You sign up 100 people, we'll give you 300% of our profits.
Excluding personal dog vacay income.
Good point.
Just had to put a disclosure in there.
You know what? If I can't get a cut of that profits, I don't think we're going to give it to our audience either.
Yeah, there you go. You could have Matthew's cut.
Exactly. Yes.
Oh, I like it.
So, anyways, what's going on this week? Am I up first? I'm up the bat first. Cool. So, like I said, this episode is all about futurism. Not exactly sure how this came to be, but I have a question, James. Do you have all of your hands?
Let me check. 1, 2, 3. Yes.
Okay, cool. Well, if you ever lose one, I got some good news. Some researchers in the Europe, they have developed a new hand, a new prosthetic hand. And this to me, okay, so I should start. I gotta peel this back a little bit. When I was in college, or no, high school, when I was my senior year of high school, I was in advanced placement biology because I was smart. And we had to do this presentation on a biological thing. And I was hanging out with this real cool chick, and we were, like, doing the project together. And she was
that's
like
a good story.
I know. It's awesome. But she was doing, like, the flirtatious, like, oh, whatever you want to do it on, we can do it on. And me being a dork was just like, okay, well, instead of, like, oh, you want to hang out, quote unquote. No, I actually wanted to, like, do the project. So we did the project on cybernetics, and I got, like, stoked. I was so excited because what we did was it was great. We basically went through, like, all the different cybernetic projects out there that at the time, this is a long time ago. Oh my goodness, almost a decade ago. And what we did was we built out this, like, how to create a superhuman, like a superhero with cybernetics. And, like, we were talking about, like, controlling...
Like Terminator style? Like, that kind of thing, or...?
No. Not like... Because Terminator's
like
not...
a robot.
No. Not a robot. Cybernetics. So, like, cybernetic enhancement. So, like optical implants for your eyeballs. So, like, Google
Glass...
So,
like,
Glass
RoboCop.
Yes, exactly. Okay. So, Google Glass is...
Or Darth Vader, perhaps?
You're missing the point, yes.
Okay. We're just trying to get a mental image of what cybernetics means.
Okay, good. Cybernetics. Cybernetics is actually the idea of connections between some sort of a motor mechanic and some sort of a brain kinetic. It's almost never used in the context of a computer controlling a robotic arm, but technically that definition works. Usually okay. It's used in the context of, like, your brain controlling or, you know, communicating with your brain. So, like, cochlear implants
Darth
is an
Vader.
Example of that. Yes. I'm so there. Cochlear implants is an example of this where it's like they actually tie electrodes into your cochlea and then they transmit sound. So you can hear if you can't hear. They have, like, ocular implants. They can, like, they have monkeys that could control stuff with their brains, mechanical arms and stuff. So this is like a field moving forward, and I've always been super stoked about it. My dream one day is to have cybernetic enhancements, and to become more than human.
Any in particular?
Yes.
Well, I have an amazing beard.
Yes.
Cyber hair.
So one of the stories I'm writing does have a cyborg, and guess what he has? A cybernetic beard. It's not as lame as it sounds. It sounds kind of lame. But it's because he's, like, being eaten by nanobots that are, like, transforming his whole body slowly into a robot, and it, like, starts affecting his face, so he kind of grows like a robot beard.
So what's that particular enhancement?
Well, so what?
I got to read the story to find out.
You got to read the story to find out. It doesn't actually give him any, like, mechanical ability so much as it's supposed to show the depth of, like, how invasive and how sophisticated animal these nanobots are, where they not only will attack your hair, but they'll actually turn your hair into metal so that it acts like a heat sink. And allows it to so it's cool. It's not lame, trust me. Sometimes when I describe my stories out loud without like all the backstory, they sound super lame. I like have to remind people, this isn't as dumb as it sounds, okay? trust me. And anyways, so what was I talking about? You asked what I would want, and I said I was gonna say, I want extra limbs. I want like two extra arms. I think that'd be great.
And then you just did a fighting stance. Is that so you can get into fights? Or?
Yes. Yes. Yeah, exactly.
Exactly. Yes.
I have like four arms going. Oh, man.
Textual driving. Wait, exactly. The eyes.
Yeah. oh my goodness, there's so many cool things you could do. Anyways, big step.
If I had three eyes, would that enable me to see in 4D?
No.
Oh, okay. Well, I figure I got two eyes. I can already see in 3D. I'm just going to keep adding in dimension. No? All right.
No.
All right.
You don't live in 4D. You live in 3D. You're like hoping you're a psychic.
I'll take that enhancement too, I guess. I don't know.
So what this stuff does, it's pretty cool. They actually, I guess it was a couple of years ago, they developed this feeling hand where it had a couple of motor actuators and it had a couple of touch sensors, and they temporarily installed it in a dude straight into his nerval packets in his arm so that he could control the mechanics of it with his hand, with his brain, and then it would send signals from the touch sensors directly into his brain, into the nerval packets, so into his brain essentially. Not really. It travels up his arm into his nervous system.
Nerval.
nerval system. So basically what happens is this dude could control a hand and the hand could send him information back. But it was just seeing if it was possible. So this
is like Luke Skywalker, if I'm going to stick with mine.
Yes, actually, that's exactly what it's like. These guys, you got to check this hand out, man. It like looks like a fully articulated hand. It looks very cool. It's got a bunch of pads on it where you could like, it's got touch sensors on the fingertips, on the palms, like pressure sensors, temperature sensors. But they're going to, later this year, they're going to install it into an undisclosed person. They haven't given his name out. But they're going to full-on be communicating with him. So it's like, and I've always thought that this is the way you needed to do cybernetics. Like, you know, cybernetic enhancements. You know, there are really cool ones that are non-invasive that, like, just strap to your arm. You, like, use muscles to control it. They're very, very articulated. I think it's great. But I've always believed that the long-term solution to, like, amputees and people who lose their limbs is this sort of a thing. Because what's really cool is the brain can learn how to, like, deal with it, like, and rearrange the neurons in order to be able to, get better control over time, better understanding of it. So you'll be able to more and more information will be able to be packed into these things, and we'll get better and better at like installing it into your arm. I like the word install.
That's amazing.
Yeah. So this is like, this is super exciting. I give it another 30 years before I actually cut one of my own arms off in order to get an upgraded
before
arm.
Before you do it on purpose?
Yes.
Okay, that's cool.
Because this stuff is awesome, and it gets me really excited.
What a line! I give it 30 years before I purposely cut off my hand in order to get a cybernetic hand. All right,
Dean Kamen. Dean Kamen, the dude who created the Segway, and
did he threaten to cut off his legs?
Yeah, revolutionized transportation for all of us forever. Or that was his goal. Who knows if he succeeded? I'll give you a hint.
Oh, I know.
He didn't!
that will play very nicely into another conversation we have later.
Cool. But Dean Kamen, actually, pretty much since then, has been working on these types of prosthetics, automated prosthetics, and has been doing incredible work. I mean, this other company is cool, but nothing to what compared to what Dean Kamen has been doing for like energy efficiencies, just overall control. Like the guy is brilliant. Like he's undoubtedly amazing at what he does. Building
kind of like, style, but he's smart.
Yeah. He doesn't really doesn't really have a sense of what's cool, but. Which is the problem with the Segway, because the Segway was an incredible piece of technology, just not very cool.
Which, I'll be honest, if they could have gotten the price point a little bit lower, I probably would have gotten over it very quickly.
Yeah.
I think that was part of the problem.
Oh, it was a huge part of the problem. It was not cool enough for a $3,000, $5,000 machine. But
now,
Dean Kamen...
$1,000?
Maybe.
That's cool enough for that.
Yeah. And
dude,
Dean Kamen,
$1,000 for a Segway? Come on.
I might. A computer, exactly. A nice computer, I might do that.
Exactly.
But he does ridiculous work, and he does it for the troops. Like he's actually like it's a really, really respectable program that he does, in my opinion. Huh. You know, just taking care of people who don't have limbs anymore. And he does stuff for like where he does like double amputees where he like gives dudes with no arms again and like control of their fingers. It's crazy. But his statement has been he's going to keep his project what he does, and he says he's going to keep working on it until the day that the other soldiers say, maybe I should lose a hand too, because you're really cool now. He goes, I want prosthetics to be as good as an actual limb. And the day we can go a step further, I'm going to stop, because I don't want people to start whacking off their limbs in order to get my robotic arms, which I think is a great standard. But it's going to happen, Dean Kamen, and I'm going to be part of it, so back off.
I'm going to be an early adopter.
Right? See, that's the thing is I just want – okay, so this is ridiculous, but what I really want is I want them to have like whatever plug they're going to put into me. Like I just want it to be a universal adapter for all future upgrades. So every year or so I can get a new arm that's even cooler than last year's but will just like plug in so I don't have to do more interfacing into my nerves. That's the only thing that worries me actually. Mm. And I think that in like – 30 years, we'll have kind of gotten a handle on how to do that.
A handle.
Yeah. Anyway, so that's cool. I'm super stoked about it. But
very cool.
The future.
I am super stoked about something that is not nearly as... it has to do with the future. Let me put it that way.
Tell me about it.
It's just on a different level. It is a calendaring app, which is why it has to do with the future. It's called Sunrise, and this is interesting. I have used an iPhone. I got an iPhone the first year it came out.
Yeah,
right. Like, it was like that. Like that Thanksgiving.
That Thanksgiving, it's back when it came out in June. So you got it 4 months late.
Yeah.
Not really an early adopter. Took you 4 months to get one.
I know. Well, I waited for the price drop, let's put it that way.
Right.
They had to like cut it like $300 or whatever it was. So I got it. Since then, I have been using the standard mail app and the standard calendar app, and they're all synced with Google, basically. So I use Google for my calendar and my email, but I've been using the standard iPhone apps to manage them. I've been doing that for a really long time. In the span of, I think it's 2 weeks, I have replaced both of those apps, which is really incredible because those were like on my bottom bar. I use them all the time, live and die by them type of thing. No, seriously, if I have an event that for whatever reason doesn't get copied over to my calendar, I do not show up because that's the way I work, which happens a lot because I don't know this online, but I have to do some wonky stuff in order to get my HP events on my phone because I'm not in their exchange program thing because they don't like iPhones, so they make you do some crazy stuff. So I live and die by it. The point of all of that is to say in the last 2 weeks, I replaced both of those. We talked about Mailbox last time and, you know, some of my thoughts on that. Now I'm talking about Sunrise, which is a calendar app. And it's one of those where, like, so far everyone's been like, this is the only one that is actually worthy of replacing the built-in app, because all the other ones are just kind of fun skins. Go ahead.
Yeah, I was going to say, that is like one thing I've never had any trouble with is the calendar app. Like, there is something to be desired with the mail app, but not a lot, in my opinion. Mm-hmm. But the calendar app, what? I've never thought twice. So I'm excited to hear what they could have done, what they think could do differently and better.
So, so here's basically what they did, which is a big difference, is it's not just a skin. They actually have their own servers that they pump everything through to make sure that it's all in sync, which can be an issue when you're dealing with multiple calendars and multiple different types of connections. Right. And so what they do is they pull in your Google Calendar, which is a lot nicer than, like, if you do it the Google way, you got to go to, like, their mobile sync and you got to actually click your calendars. You know what I'm talking about? It's not as straightforward as you would like it to be. Right. Or you got to do all their different CalDev stuff. It's a pain. So, but with this one, they just, like, you sign into your account, boom, select the ones you want, done. Really nice. You also can sign into your LinkedIn, which I have found so far from an event standpoint to be lame, because no one does LinkedIn events.
LinkedIn had events.
Yeah, or you can also sign into your Facebook account, okay? So, but what's cool about it is when you have a meeting, it will tell you the people who are going to the meeting. And here's where it actually becomes neat, is like with LinkedIn, okay, it doesn't do the events, but oftentimes, especially for work, it knows the people in LinkedIn and will give me their picture. So I can actually see, like, who's this person I'm talking to, which for me, I do everything over the phone, so it's actually kind of nice to know, that's what you look like. And so it'll also sync up your Facebook birthdays with it, which is really nice because you can actually tap on it for each day, and then it'll give you the names, and it could be like, wish them happy birthday on their timeline, or send them a text message, or actually visit their Facebook profile page. Instead of, you know, so it streamlines that process of wishing someone a happy birthday, which is nice. It also has just, you know, it includes the weather in there, you know, which is cool, I guess. And so it's got that. The other cool part that I like about it, which has always been frustrating with me, I don't know about if you, the way you use the app, but I am constantly jumping between the daily view and the monthly view. Because I want to know what's going on during the day. But then there's times when people are asking me, well, what are we doing on this day or that day or a month from now? And then I got to switch over to the month view and then, you know, go find the date. And then it gives you just like, because I don't have the expanded screen. I only have the 3.5-inch screen, like this half-inch space to actually see the events that are happening on that day.
Yeah.
You know what I'm talking about? You may not, because like I said, you got extra space, but it's not a lot of space to see what's going on.
Right. No. I agree. I totally understand what you're saying.
Okay. So what this one has is up at the very top, it has 2 weeks worth of dates, and then it has the timeline underneath it. So you can clearly see what the week is and what's coming up in the next week. And then you also just have your events, and you can scroll through the timeline. And as you scroll, the 2 week calendar at the top will scroll with you, so you know what you're doing. There's an easy way to get back to where you are today. That's a cool little animation thingy. And then what's really neat is if you decide, okay, I want to go to a different month, when you tap on that 2 week calendar view, it expands to be an entire month and actually kind of grays out the dates and tells you, here's what the month is. You scroll to the month you want, and then once you do that, the month fades away. It brings back your dates, and when you click on a specific date, it'll shrink back up to that 2 week view and the timeline of where you are in
cool
that week. So I guess for me, it has two things that it does really, really nice. The first one is the transition between the daily view and the monthly view, which, like I said, I do that all the time, and it's a pain to have to go back and forth. It is very, very nice and very well done. And then what I also like, honestly, it's yet to be seen how it works, is I like that it will keep everything synced on their servers all the time instead of waiting for me to have to open up the app to sync it. I mean,
yeah,
I'll have to open up the app to get the data, but it should theoretically already have been synced and kept up to date.
Which is nice. I mean, that makes a big difference. I mean, like, you know, honestly, like, I'm the example. Well, yeah. I hate having to open, especially because of how iOS does syncing, and, you know, the third, you know, multitasking and whatnot. It's not updating the information on your hard drive when it's not open. So it's like, you know, yeah, that first sync can take a while, and it can kind of, you know, mess everything. Like, if you're looking at other devices or looking other places, yeah. So that's cool. That is good that they do that that way.
I have found, I think I've had to do this a few times. And by a few, I mean, I'll probably do it once a year, maybe once every 6 months. I will actually literally turn off the calendar app and then to delete all the information and then just do a straight up resync to get it all back up to date. Because things just get, they just get wonkier. Things stop adding to it. And I can see an event on the web browser. Like, it is not in my phone. What is wrong with this?
Really?
Yeah, and I'll be like, resync, won't do it. And then all I'll do is I'll literally just turn off the calendar app. You open it back up, and it's like, are you sure you want to do this? It will delete everything. Oh, my gosh. And do it. Get rid of it. It'll all be gone. And then I'll literally turn it back on, wait for it to sync. Ta-da! The event shows up. Like, great. So I don't fully understand how all that works. My hope is that they claim by doing everything on their server, that won't happen. Or it means that there's a problem, there's absolutely no way for me to fix it.
Right, I was going to say. This is either a great thing or catastrophic, so.
Yeah, so it's called Sunrise. And like I said, I follow multiple news sources, as you know. And yes. I've had three different independent ones recommend it. So. Okay. To me, that starts to, you know, Lifehacker being one of them. And pretty much any time Lifehacker recommends something, I'm like, okay, this is worth at least looking into if it's free, which is the other nice part about it. This is actually a free app. And so,
yeah,
that's cool.
That is one thing I've noticed with the iPad is that good apps are not free on the iPad.
I would say there are, and it's slowly trickling down to the phone as well. You know, where you're going to pay 99 cents for something that...
Which, I don't have any problem with that, actually, especially if there's like an obnoxious free version where you can try this out free before you, you know, with ads, and it's awful. But then you pay 99 cents and get rid of the ads. Like, I don't mind that. But I wanted a note-taking app for my iPad, and so I got Notability, which was pretty cool, but it was $1.99, and I couldn't use it before I actually tried it. I ended up using it on a friend's device, which is how I knew that I would like it, but man, that was nerve-wracking. Like, I didn't want to spend
it. You know, that is something that I really feel like the app stores need to figure out how to do. Yeah. I mean, I know that a lot of apps, they will, or app developers, the way they get around it is they'll give you a light version. And I think it'd be cool if they gave you like just a demo version. Hey, yeah, you can use this and then it'll magically break after a week.
30 days, yeah.
I don't know. I would be okay with that because I just want to test it. Same with games, right? Is this a good game? I don't know. I'm dependent on reviews of random people. And I don't know if their tastes are the same as mine. And no offense, but Game Center doesn't quite cut it when it comes to game recommendations because I don't know why it's not implemented well. It's probably very difficult to do.
Right.
And so it's just like, man, if there were a way to let me temporarily download something or download a demo version. See, okay, how about just this? We're going to put it out there. Instead of developers making two separate apps, one that's the light version and one that's the full version, have it so that developers can they create two separate apps, and one it's literally a demo, one's the real one, and then in iOS it manages all that, where you can say, yeah, let me download the demo, and then you can do that, and it downloads that other one, and if you love it, there's an opportunity for it to say, yeah, you know what, give me the full version, and then all it does is it essentially deletes that app and downloads the full-blown version of it. Good to go. Brilliant. Solved it.
That's kind of what these other ones, well, it's not exactly, but it's like, you know, I'm playing Phrase Friends free, they have like a, which is an awful, it's a fun game, it's a really fun game, it is one of the worst written apps ever, it's terrible.
Well, you're saying it's like the equivalent of doing the in-app purchase where, basically do an in-app purchase to upgrade this entire thing?
Yeah, pretty much.
All right.
And
I guess. And I just, honestly, I feel like it would be cool with some of those. It's really hard to tell that that's how it works. And and I just feel like, no, just let me download a demo. I don't know. I
understand. Yeah.
Because how's Madden, right? That's a fun iOS game for football. You know, how would Madden do that? You could play one game for free. And then right. If you want to play the rest of it, you got to upgrade.
So, well, you would do it like you would with whenever big name games come out, where you'd have a light version where you could play with one team, and it'd be the Detroit Lions.
See, and that's what I'm saying, is they should let Apple manage all of that in a single, download experience. Well, and I actually think they'll see their sales go up because you...
It's one of those things where I think you could, and Apple could facilitate it. It does seem like it's something that's automatable. I don't know if it's the worst solution that we have right now. It's what we had forever. I mean, that's...
Well, I know, and I just think it could be better, because part of the other thing it will do is it will set the expectations of, hey, this is just a demo.
Yeah.
This is not a separate download. This is, this is not a light version. You know what I mean? No, you cannot enjoy the entire thing. You are literally... downloading this to decide if you want to pay for it. You know, as opposed to what I think happens with the light version is you're downloading it to see how much can I play for free.
Yeah, can I survive with just this?
So I think it changes the mindset of the downloader.
But could app developers customer. Do that themselves just by calling it, Warrior Game Battle Station Demo, and then Warrior Game Battle Station Full. Like, I don't know. I guess I don't know. I feel like that would be something cool that Apple could do. But I have a feeling that Apple's response is that's a lot more infrastructure. That's a lot of changing of the code, all for the sake of doing something that's already has a decent implementation, and developers seem to like it. Cause like the light versions are usually, the demo you're talking about is the idea of you play, you get one level or you get, half of the features or you have a 30 days to use it and then it goes away. And then you have to get the paid version. Whereas the light version is usually just that. But it's got ads in it and it's a completely separate download. So people will, so that the developers make money off of it, even if you don't, pay for it, they don't make as much. And then when you actually pay for the full version, I don't know. I think it would be very cool, and I'd appreciate it. Apple, get on it, guys. But I don't know. I just don't know if it's necessary. And I have a feeling Apple feels like they have a bigger fish to fry.
I keep thinking about that situation that you were talking about with the Notes app, where you wanted to try it, and that developer did not give you a way to do it, and. Right. And so what if, okay, fine, you want to do your own light app, that's totally cool, and perhaps you disable some sort of demo preview thing, and then Apple, builds in a, you could try this for, they treat it just like a rental thing. You could try this thing for 24 hours.
That would be cool if like, as a developer, you could go into iTunes and they'd have like a little radio thing or a radio button thing where you're like, do you want to have people be able to demo this? You click yes, exactly. Demo. And then, how long do you want them to be able to demo it for? 24 hours, 48 hours, a week, a month. Give people
three times. They can open it three times, whatever.
Right.
Yeah.
And then it just is a ticking time bomb in your, and because it's, you downloaded it through the app. Yeah. You know what? If you were to do that, I think that would be very cool. I would use that a lot. Because it's, for example, one of the things that I want to do is I actually really want to get a heavy duty, FTP client for my phone so that I can manage my, servers anywhere in the world. But the reason why I don't is because I realize the best ones cost a couple bucks. They, $5 and $10 in some cases. But these are like really, really, really nice things. And I just don't know which one I want to spend my $10 on. And I realize like Notability, for me, it's like $2, dude. I like blow my nose at $2. Like so often, it's just not even like, I realize it was like a small, but for a bigger app, especially a more expensive one, like $10, like that's a legit purchase there, and I want to make sure that I don't waste it. And I think really this becomes incredibly important as you move into will Apple TV have video games? You know, that questions like that. Because when you talk about those bigger game developments, I'll tell you what, I spend $20, $30 on video games every once in a while. But I almost never do it if I haven't touched the game first. And, you know, and I think that there's a much better implementation than if you could give me a demo game for 24 hours or 7 days, and then it's going to automatically delete itself, but it's the full game, man.
Necessarily automatically delete itself, you know, it grays out or something, and the next time you tap on it, it just gives you a little pop of, hey, buy this whole thing if you want to keep trying it. You're like, oh, yeah, totally, one-tap purchase starts downloading.
Right, well, it's already downloaded. All it would do is, you know, ungray it.
Exactly. So, or since someone, I guess they would have, there could be an issue with like jailbreakers who figure out how to get around that.
Well, yeah, but that's already an issue with jailbreakers. You can download anything from the internet. I don't know. Interesting. Okay. Wow, that was not what we came here to talk about today.
No, but you know what? I loved it.
Me too. Me too. But it does, you know, it segues nicely. It segues really, does it? What do you want to talk about next? Let's segue nicely.
I want to talk about supercapacitors. Is that...
Well, I was gonna go into the Sony PlayStation.
Oh, okay.
Announced that since we're talking about games and the future of gaming. So Sony PlayStation made an announcement. The PlayStation didn't make the announcement. Sony made an announcement about the PlayStation 4. So this is the big question on everybody's mind leading into it. How is it gonna look? Is it gonna look cool? Is it gonna look competitive? And we want to know, James. How does it look?
It looks amazing in my mind.
Yes.
Which is the only place that I have seen it. Because I love the Verge's title. It's so awesome. Sony fails to show PlayStation 4 console at PlayStation 4 event. Just like, what? So Sony has this special event. I mean, like, you know, just for them. And I believe it was in New York, if I remember correctly. People, like, fly out to go see this. They get them all in an auditorium. They never show them the console. Not once.
They show them the controller.
They show them the controller, yes. And they show them some of the graphics and some of the games, if I remember correctly, that will be supported. They talk about the streaming capabilities that we talked about, which is actually slightly different than what we had thought it was going to be.
What did they say it was... Give for the audience sake, give us a blow by blow.
So, thanks. So originally we thought you'd be able to stream games from the internet from Sony servers, and you still might be able to, but what they talked about was you can have friends can either watch you remotely play and, you know, so you could do that, or they can and if they wanted to, they could actually take over the game for you. So if I'm understanding it correctly, they are streaming their controls to a game that you're playing locally on your computer.
Well, that's kind of cool.
Yeah, that is cool. There are some other things that they talked about where it'll actually have like two separate processors and, you know, so it could be downloading and doing updates with the one while you're playing or it's asleep, you know, and so you're not having to do like the whole... you know, wait for updates when you first turn it on. And so from a capability standpoint, it sounds very cool. They talked about their camera and how that's going to be awesomer and better and things like that. But they literally did not show what the console is going to look like, there could be a couple reasons behind it. The first one, is they just are literally not done with the final design yet, which you guys are getting close for that one. Because I believe they're talking about it coming out later this year.
Yeah.
And, you know, which to me is like, no, it needs to be done. But I think the more relevant reason, I guess, real reason, is that they know that E3 is coming up. And they don't want people to be bored. And so they're keeping the surprise for E3. And for whatever reason, they felt like they couldn't pack it all into one event. So they're doing like part one just happened, but they didn't tell everyone it was part one. And part two, the conclusion.
It's sort of like when you're watching E3. It's sort of when you're like when you're watching The Hobbit, An Unexpected Journey, and they never show you what the dragon Smaug looks like the entire movie because they want you, you know, because when The Hobbit, The Desolation of Smaug, a sequel to The Hobbit, An Unexpected Journey, comes out, they want you to be excited about something for that first moment when you get to see the dragon, like, oh my gosh, what does the dragon look like? It's crazy. And, you know, and so they just want there to be excitement, still. And that would be my thought, because yeah, it's sort of ludicrous, the idea that you'd be walking into E3 but you know, one of the big questions here is why didn't they wait till E3? I mean, like, you know, are they taking a page out of Apple's playbook? You know,
not really, because Apple doesn't say anything until they tell you everything.
Right, exactly. Yeah, until it's ready to launch. But it was an interesting strategy, the whole thing, like doing a pre-E3 announcement. This thing is so big that we have to announce it twice. I don't know.
Do they feel like there was some other thing, I don't know, you know, going on that they really felt the need to bring the conversation back to them? Even though they didn't have a full story to tell yet, they wanted, you know what I mean? I feel like, you know, everyone was talking about, oh, we got a new Xbox coming. It's going to be amazing. And
Wii U like, just launched. I wonder, and I have a feeling that part of it is actual excitement. I think part of it might be just enthusiasm. I think they believe they've actually got a very cool system on their hands. They've got something very exciting, and they kind of wanted to get out there and say it. And they didn't want the distraction of E3. I mean, that is the reason why Apple doesn't participate in CES is because they don't, or you know, forever is because Apple or you know Steve Jobs wanted the spotlight all on himself. He didn't want to have to share the media at all. And I have a feeling that Sony knew that they were going to have to go into E3 and they were going to make this announcement, and they couldn't. You know, it would have, there's a cacophony of noise, especially there'll be new Wii U games coming out. There'll be, you know, updates to the Xbox. Everybody will be making their big announcements. I think Sony wanted they wanted center stage for a little while. And that's the feeling I get. And there's this little bit of a question of, I wonder, like, you know, man, it seems crazy that they wouldn't actually show the system, but at the same time.
So I guess back in 2005, they had a slight embarrassment where they did show kind of some earlier mock-ups of the PS3, and then the real one turned out to be much bulkier and had a lot less features.
Yeah.
And, you know, so they're like, maybe they're looking to avoid that. I don't know.
That is true. I mean, that has been one of the drumbeats that have been going since the announcement, is the idea that, you know, Sony.
Which I'm still like, how do you not know what it is? I just don't.
Well, I think the box is, you know, somebody sits down, you know, we want it to look like this. We want it to have these dimensions. And then the engineers look at it and go, that's not going to happen. You know, I don't know. I think Sony does have a history of overpromising and under-delivering, which, you know, it makes everybody really nervous, but I don't know. So this is an interesting conversation, but I do have a question about your thoughts on the actual system itself. Like, what, you know, given what's out there, like, one of the big things that they really, you know, it's like they have a share button now, and one of the big things that they obviously got into is the idea of being able to record video of you playing games, share that very quickly, streaming the game to your friends, being able to, you know, control everything. I don't know, what are your thoughts on the strategy for the system?
Well, let me think about this. You know, I know that they're definitely continuing down the track of we're going to improve graphics and speed and, you know, capabilities, right? They're very much headed down that track with this idea of, oh, there's this, what they call a depth camera, you know, component to it. And I feel like they're over their little handheld orb things.
Yeah. But they did show a demonstration of it and it looked dumb, but yeah.
Yeah, so for me, it was like they're still very much headed down that path. And you know as well as I do, at the end of the day, it all comes down to content and how good are the games in terms of both gameplay and, you know, graphics are important, I suppose. You know, for me, it's kind of like it would have been nice to, and maybe this just isn't appropriate and we're totally biased because we are Apple fanboys, whereas like, what improvements have you made for developers? Have you made it easier for them to make games?
Yeah.
And you know what I mean? Given our conversation last week where it was talking about how theoretically Apple could come out and be like, hey, SDK for Apple TV. Guess what? You guys already know how to code everything too. That's amazing. And we figured out some magical way where you don't have to care about screen resolution.
Right.
You know what I mean? And just like, before you know it, you've got like 10,000 apps in the App Store.
Some magical way. James, nobody has ever cared about screen resolution until the iPhone. It's like the first time you've had like a standard you just have to go back to normal programming.
Well, whatever. You know, whatever. Well, what I'm saying is that, well, these are developers who aren't used to dealing with
that's
that
true,
for
yeah.
iOS. So that was my point.
Okay, good point.
But anyways, you know, it'd be cool to see Sony have done something like that where they go, yeah, you know what, this console's awesome, it's amazing, and we're going to play some flippin' awesome games on it. If you want to get, you know, down into the depths of the code, you can. But guess what? We also made this SDK that is, you know, very accessible. Graphics and style will, you know, they'll have that same feel, but they're going to be super high quality, blah, blah, blah. You can make games, upload them to the store, stuff like that. And they just didn't really talk about it, but...
And it's one of the comments that...
I'm really not a gamer either, which makes it hard for me to judge how amazing it is.
Yeah. I definitely think so. This is an interesting. This is the question that I'm asking myself. So what we talked about last week, and definitely this sort of like moving revolution of how gaming is done, what should be coming, and the PlayStation 4, like they definitely made a big step in social gaming. And the idea of incorporating different social abilities like that was a huge push on it. That was it seemed to me that was their big innovation, you know, outside of technological improvements to the system and how it performs. Because the whole idea was they really want, you know, it's got a share button on the controller so you can quickly share stuff. Which is, I think, is important because I think that's one thing that we're definitely seeing with the, you know, that you, one of the things that goes on in mobile is games where you compete against other people and you share your experiences with other people are big. And not to mention, like, you know, they seem to make a really big deal about sharing your video game content. It's not about, it's not about chatting. It's not about hanging out with your friends. It's about getting that amazing headshot where you ricocheted the bullet off the seven walls and, you know, and took the dude out, and then being able to replay that for your friends. You know, and if you've never seen that Halo shot, it's incredible.
It is amazing.
And that's a big thing. Like I actually give them props for doing that. And a lot of gamers are like, that's super stupid. That doesn't have anything to do with playing video games. But you're like, that's honestly, like, there's a huge portion of the population that's a big part of it for them is being able to share it with their friends and make videos. And I think if you make it easy enough to distribute, you'll get even more content and you'll get these groups where people are doing it. I actually think that was a really good move on their part. But on the flip side, everything else is very classical, you know, post PC, era, which is the I think that's just the PC era. Where you have one piece of, So where you have one, you know, piece of hardware that sits in your you know, you have one piece of hardware with no screen. It's got some sort of an interface, a specified interface. In this case, it's controllers and the computer. It's a keyboard. You plug it in the screen. You move it around. You can connect it to the internet. It's very cool, but it doesn't acknowledge some of the changes that have happened in the post-PC era, where, you know, what are definitions of the post-PC era? We got, you know, less powerful computers that are a little more omnipresent. They're cheaper. They're easier to put everywhere. And the PlayStation 4 doesn't really acknowledge that. Well, that's not really Sony style. I don't necessarily blame them for that. But there's other aspects of the post-PC era, as you know, as we call it. I feel lame using post-PC this much. But it sounds like one of those like news sites that you really hate reading because they have like decent news, but they just use like the worst jargon ever. So I'm going to stop. So this idea that like
it's called mobile era.
But what's weird about it is that it's not mobile. That's and I don't think it's supposed to be. So ideally, if it's cheap, it's like the Apple TV is not mobile. And yet I think it's clearly
the hockey puck. Come on, it's hard to get any more mobile than that.
Yeah, but it's not.
I know. It's plugged into a wall.
I was going to say, it's plugged into multiple things. very big things, usually. What's the big thing with the Apple TV? And this is everything we're saying about Apple is true of Android. And so I say that in the context of, there are devices where you can sling your stuff to your TV from your Android phone. You can interact with your Android phone. You can use it as a remote. You can use it as a controller. You can play other people in the game while, posting it to the TV, and which eventually is where, all this goes. But there's other things that's like pricing. They didn't change how you think about the pricing of the game, which is, definitely something that looks like that has a lot to do with the developers and how much money the developers make. They don't want that changed. But I think that they're really, really going to run into a problem in the next year or so where somebody else is going to swoop in and make a bunch of sales because they're going to decide to sell games for $10. They're going to tell their developers, you're only going to be selling these games for $10 a game.
And it's not only that. I also, the way that I look at it as a non-gamer is what else are you bringing to the table? And Microsoft clearly gets that, which has actually been their biggest criticism is they're forgetting about games. And that's something that the Apple TV can bring as well is, we've got games, but we've got this other stuff as well. And it feels like, I'm sure, Sony's got some of it, but they're clearly about games.
Yeah.
And that's there. Hey, just out of curiosity, they probably didn't even talk about it. It's the Xbox that I want to know if they have a Blu-ray player in it or not, because Sony will obviously have a Blu-ray player.
I was remembering
one of them had the wrong one,
I'm sure the Xbox will have a Blu-ray. If it has a disc drive at all,
that was the other thing too, right? Isn't there? You're going to be able to download or stream backwards compatible games. I was stunned about that, which they were like, not all of them will work or something. Backwards compatibility, man, that is a sticky wicket for sure.
Yeah, it's a mess. It's difficult.
But at the same time, it's like, guys, did you really not think you were coming out with another console? You didn't. You know what I mean? It's like, if you know that you're going to come out with something new, why don't you set up the current one so that it's easier to, I don't know, maybe that's ridiculous.
I'm going to say, try to think about what you did 5 years ago in your life and try to imagine if you were to make a bunch of decisions 5 years ago, okay, and you want to make it forward compatible. So all the apps that you use, all the different ways you do life, how you drive your car. And in 5 years, you're not going to have to change anything ever. Well, sometimes stuff changes. And the thing is, the real problem is?
Not for me. I'm saving for retirement. I know it's going to happen to the day.
You know what the real problem was? PlayStation 3 could play PlayStation 1 games. So you're talking about you're talking about architectures that were designed to be able to run all the way back to super old games, and they finally just were like, we're moving on. some of these games are I don't know, it's got to happen eventually or occasionally. I don't hold that against them at all.
But I understand.
I definitely do think one of the big problems is that there's no change in distribution of how games go. And the idea of, Microsoft clearly, I think their execution on the whole glass thing where, any tablet can connect to your Microsoft has not been stellar. But in concept, I think that's the right direction. It's the sort of thing that Apple's is doing. It's the sort of thing that Android is doing. And it's the sort of thing that what's going on? Are
you cannot hear it, but that dog is outside barking right now.
Oh, that's, yeah, okay. I can't hear it, so I don't care.
We're those neighbors.
Yep. But, yeah, so, you know, I just feel like there are a lot of things that are going on in the industry right now that Sony decided weren't a very big deal. And I feel like that's really going to come in and mess with them in the next 2 years. I think the expectation on Sony is that they compete again. You know, when Nintendo doesn't integrate these technologies, I feel like people are a little more forgiving, but not really. It's not like the system's selling crazy. You know, the system's not selling. That's the problem.
They're not forgiving.
Yeah. And but I think we're, I think the
media, we just all feel bad because it's Nintendo.
Right, exactly. Whereas the PlayStation, it's like there's a real expectation, and it's, you start to beat the drumbeat of, you know, hey guys, the heck's the deal here? Why don't you, you know, why aren't,
well,
you,
well, that
keeping
was
up
because of the way they positioned themselves, right? And Nintendo was like, we're gonna make awesome, fun games, and it just so happens we'll make the hardware to play those games. I mean, like it or not, they're a software company that happens to do hardware.
Yeah.
Whereas Sony really positioned themselves as saying, no, we are going to be a premier hardware company, and we're going to push the bounds of technology and what these things can do. And their big problem is that Microsoft came along and said, you know, they played the same game that Sony did. And so, you know, Sony to Nintendo, you go, man, Sony's doing some amazing things. And then, you know, but Sony to Microsoft, you're like, yeah, Microsoft can do it too. And now all of a sudden you got this other guy coming in, right? This Apple player where we're all like, ooh, this could be interesting if they all start to compete against each other, because Apple's clearly doing a different strategy. They, if anything, Apple's the guy who's going to make Nintendo obsolete, because they're going to do what Nintendo's doing.
Well, I think as far, you know, I think Apple is definitely like a, Apple is definitely a big threat to Nintendo, but I still think Android's a giant threat to Nintendo and to these other players, because the example I gave was that GameStick thing. Like, there, the advent of the $100 gaming system is on the cusp, and the idea of powerful, you know, cool games that can run on these like super cheap systems is about here, and it's the sort of thing that will get me in the game, literally, and not literally. I won't actually be inside the game. I meant that, no pun intended. But I feel like, I don't know, you know, and there's something to be said about being the like you said, the premier, the top, the luxury item, the very best in the hardware. I think they sell systems for that reason. I mean, they sell Macs. You know, I'm not saying that cost is the only thing that you can drive on, but, you know, I think what you're going to do, I feel like when you are the best and you are the top of the line, you have to do, I don't know. Maybe this is completely a dumb position. Maybe what they're doing is perfect because it's what Apple does. The biggest difference between PlayStation and Apple, though, is that Apple makes a killer profit whether they sell one computer or a million. They only need to sell like half as many computers as they are in order to justify the department. Whereas Sony has notoriously sold the systems for less than they cost to manufacture. You know, the Sony doesn't have the luxury of being able to, well, we don't really care how many systems we sell because we're still going to make a ton of money. They really need to, you know, sell market share. And I don't know. It's interesting. I'm looking forward to see it because they're clearly sticking with a decent, you know, they're sticking with a strategy that's worked for a long time. And I feel like the industry's changing, and it's going to be rough on them if they're not careful. But
yeah, and we will know more come E3.
Yeah. Okay.
In the meantime, let's talk about supercapacitors.
Supercapacitors. You know what? I got a better idea, James. Let's talk about graphene.
Okay.
All right. These are they're the same thing. That's what the supercapacitors are made of. I thought you were. Did you even read the article?
I watched the video.
Yeah. Okay. Well, that's true. Oh, that's good. So, do you know what graphene is?
Do I know what graphing is?
Yeah.
I know what I think it means, but I have a funny feeling you're thinking of something different than me.
What do you think it is?
I'm thinking of it as a way of displaying data.
Oh.
Exactly.
No. G-R-A-P-H-E-E-N-E? Graphene? Did I spell that wrong? One second. Let me Google that. Graphene.
G-R-A-P-H-E-N-E.
That's what I said. Okay.
It's a very simple carbon polymer, can be used as the basic component of a supercapacitor, an electrical power storage device that charges far more rapidly than chemical batteries. Unlike other supercapacitors, though, graphene's structure also offers a high energy density. It can hold a lot of electrons, meaning that it could conceivably rival or outperform batteries in the amount of charge it can hold.
So do we want to talk about this article? You know what I mean?
You ask me what it means.
Well, no, I do. I know what it means. I was asking you if you knew what it means. I didn't need you to read the article. Jeez. I know. Let's do it.
Go ahead.
Kill me, dog. See, I have a delivery system, okay? Like, I've practiced this. This is like telling a story. And I know it's going to drive some people nuts when I do this sort of thing. But I start with your base. I start with your narrative hook where we talk about supercapacitors. Like, okay, I want to hear about supercapacitors. And then all of a sudden, we change directions to graphene. I don't care about graphene. Then I'm going to give you the chemical structure. Then I'm going to give you some of the cool things that we've known about it over time, some of the new developments. We work all the way back up to the climax of, and this is why it's such a big deal, because it's supercapacitors, and this is what a supercapacitor does. You took out the rise to action. You just cut that all out. You just jump the shark.
Other stuff I want to get to, so let's, you know, I want to get there, man.
All right. Sorry. So I'm going to give you. I'm going to give you a little bit of a background.
Next question, basically, man. I'm a good student.
So graphene is a carbon structure. Graphene, like graphite, diamonds, charcoal. It's just carbon, which is a big deal.
Carbon polymer, if you will.
Not yet. That's.
Sorry.
That's one of those words that they use in order to like try to sound cool. One of the things about graphene is a flat structure. It's a hexagonal structure, but it's completely flat. Diamonds are a lattice.
I know what that means.
It's a structure that is regular in all three dimensions. Graphite is a type of lattice where with a diamond, it has very, very, it has very particular, shear planes, which is why diamonds are incredibly strong unless you hit it at that perfect angle to get it on one of its shear planes, and then it breaks off. And that's actually what determines the structure of diamonds, is where you break it on its shear planes. Graphite is a structure where all the shear planes are parallel, which is why when you write with it, they all shear off really, like you give it any friction, all the graphite shears off and just stays on the paper, which is why you have graphite pens, and because they're like stacked layers. Whereas this, there are no shear planes because it's just one plane. And if you can get that one plane, that one sheet, it has some very cool properties. Now, it is an unbelievably tiny little sheet of carbon. It's one molecule thick, so it's not exactly, you know, they talk about how it's like it has the structural, it has a thousand times the strength of the steel of the same thickness. You're like, yeah, that's because you never get steel down to the problem is the steel at one atom thick doesn't have its lattice structure that gives it any rigidity. So yeah, it's incredibly strong at a sheet thick. It's got cool heat properties. Once again, you're like, well, that's great, but it only matters if you're talking about a sheet of, you know, of one thing. So there's sort of this, there's this big thing that's happening, and it's been very difficult to make graphite. Well, the big deal here was there's this dude, is a scientist from UCLA. They basically figured out how to make graphite ridiculously cheaply. You have a solution that has all the needed chemicals. You put it on a DVD drive. You put it into a DVD player. Spin it around. The laser hits it, and you can really literally create a it triggers the formation of the sheet, and you can get these like sheets of one layer thick graphene.
Nice.
And so now all of a sudden what's really exciting is the idea of mass producing this stuff is not ludicrous. They found this very easy way of doing it. And what's great about it is we've already always known that there are some very cool things to it. Like it's got really cool electrical characteristics and heating characteristics, which is really important because usually when if you put a charge across something, it heats up. Well, it distributes heat really well. Electrons will pass through it without creating much heat. And so it's really great for that. They could actually incorporate it in using, instead of using copper on your chips in your computer, on your stuff, you can use graphene. So there's all sorts of cool things. But the big thing here is they were messing around and they decided to treat it like a capacitor, and they found when they charged it, it had some pretty cool, it had the very cool characteristic of having all of the energy density of a lithium ion nano sheet of the same thickness and size. But it had the characteristics of a supercapacitor in that you can charge it incredibly quickly, and so this kind of gets in the difference between capacitors and batteries. Batteries they separate electrons using a chemical method. So basically chemicals will, lithium ions will separate the electrons from one side to another, and the shift as the electrons pass from the one side back to the lithium ions as they go from the excess electrons, they pass through your light bulb or whatever back to the positive protons. And at that point you lose your charge, but so it has a very high energy density and it has very regulated power. One of the cool things about lithium ion batteries is that they give you 5 volts, I think it's like 2, but they're very, very regular. They don't change over time. Whereas supercapacitors, they charge really quickly, but they discharge just as quickly. So you have to regulate the discharge, and they don't discharge linearly. As they lose charge, the voltage goes down. Yeah, but it's not, it's something we've always known about capacitors.
It's bad.
Yeah, you're right. Well, it's kind of bad. It needs to be fixed, or it needs to be dealt with. So I say all of this to say, so these guys have basically come up with a super cheap way to make supercapacitors that have the same energy density as lithium-ion batteries, except they charge in seconds.
And they also would discharge in seconds as well, or am I missing?
Yes, unless you build circuitry in order to regulate it.
Which you can do, right?
Which you can do very easily, yeah.
Thank you.
Whew. Yeah. So,
I'm getting nervous here.
The problem is that circuitry limits the efficiency of the supercapacitor.
Making it potentially cost prohibitive.
Yes. Well, and it lowers your effective energy density. It can carry as many electrons as the lithium ion batteries, but it takes more electrons to get the regular power out. But that can be compensated for. So if it's only got, let's say it's only got 80% of the charge as your lithium ion battery, but all you do is plug it into a wall and unplug it that quick, boom, boom, and you're fully charged, I think we could deal with that. that's something we could, work around.
Could you theoretically charge a capacitor just by plugging it into a wall? Does it work that way?
No, not necessarily. Because what happens is whatever your voltage is, so usually your batteries operate at like 5 volts or 3 volts. That's what they discharge and charge at. These supercapacitors will have their high voltage. So they might have like you know, in this case for a phone, might have 100 volts stored in the battery, in the capacitor. In order to charge it in a second, you'd have to hit it with 100 volts of power for a very brief time, like that fast. But you'd have to have some sort of a transformer. You'd actually have to have
What's coming out of my wall?
It's 120 volts AC. You would need 120 volts DC, which... Ooh. Is a little bit different, but it's not. It's not impossible. It's not.
I could charge it in my
it's
car.
It's not prohibitive. Yeah, and the thing is that you can actually, if you hit a capacitor with full voltage for like half a second, it will charge. If you hit it with half voltage, it will charge over time. So it won't charge if you were to like.
What does that mean over time? Like 2 seconds in this. Example?
Yeah, like 30 seconds. Like, it would take a little bit longer. Which is like, so like if you
were to... You can see what I'm trying to do, right? I'm trying to figure out, like, if I have some low voltage DC outlet in my house for some reason, you know, is it just, are we talking about a difference between like a second and 30 seconds or like a second and an hour?
It really depends. It really depends on what you're talking about. But the reality of it is, a low voltage... Let's say if you have a very high voltage capacitor, so if you have like a 500 volt capacitor and you have a 5 volt source, it'll take a minute or two. it's still very fast.
So here's my other question. Cause you know, I instantly think of cars, right? That's seems to make a lot of sense. I mean, don't get me wrong, mobile devices as well. But let's think about just cars for a second here.
Yeah.
You know, so let's just say theoretically we replace I've got a Tesla because that would be awesome. And instead of having their batteries, there's this capacitor dealy bopper inside of it.
Yeah.
Is this something where, how do I want to ask this? So I can see two ways you go about this. The first one is you recharge a battery or a capacitor, super capacitor. Or could it also make sense to, you know, to like just swap them out, like you would change batteries on a phone, that way you're not having to maybe sit around for charging. You literally are just pulling up to a charging station, handing them your capacitor. They give you a new one. You plug it in. You're off and going. So you don't even have to wait the 30 seconds. Or does it charge fast enough where you're just like, no, just. It's faster just to sit there and wait the 30 seconds.
This is how it's going to work with cars.
Especially with, you know, a place where, like with cars, you know, theoretically, you could, you know, zoop up the voltage significantly because, you know, it's a commercial and could be a controlled environment type of thing.
This is what's going to happen with cars.
Yeah. Tell me.
You're going to have a charge station that has a, you know, you're going to have big capacitors in your car, like 60,000 volts, like a ton of, that number out there. If you're an electrical engineer, you're like, you're a retard, Matthew. Fair enough. I'm a retard.
Well, what's the, what does the Tesla use or capacity?
They use lithium ion batteries, which.
How many volts are they?
I have no idea.
Okay.
That's a good question. Lithium-ion...
Let's say it's that equivalent.
So lithium-ion batteries, it doesn't matter what you do, they only deliver 2 volts. So what they have to do is they have to put them in series in order to get the voltage even higher. So I don't know what it is, but it's a lot. But let's say, theoretically, hypothetically, we've got a 660-volt capacitor in a series of 660-volt capacitors. What they'll do in the gas station... is they will have gigantic, enormous, expensive capacitors in the, you know, in your like little island thing that are like 10,000 volt capacitors, and they will charge those over a couple minute period of time. You'll pull up to your car, you'll plug in this 10,000 volt capacitor into your 660 volt car, it'll regulate it at 660 volts and it'll just dump electrons into your car. Just an enormous flood and you're done. I mean,
so here's a question. Would I actually have to stop, or is there a way to automate this so that I just kind of drive slowly by? And,
probably.
You know, because like you imagine you could eventually set it up where it's like on a road or on a highway, and you just literally drive through a toll. And
you're talking about a tremendous amount of current and voltage. So you'd absolutely have to do it with a wired system. Okay. But I don't see any reason why your Google car, your Google controlled car, couldn't pull down, slow down to about 1 mile per hour through like a tunnel, like a car wash tunnel. A little robotic arm comes out and, you know, and like plugs in, and and as you like drive at like 2 miles, as your car drives itself at like 2 miles per hour, and then it just boom, hits you with a huge jolt of electricity. You've got a full charge. It pulls out, and you keep going. I can't wait for NASCAR to get into this stuff, man. It's gonna be awesome.
Oh, dude.
But,
oh man, that would be amazing.
Yeah. So I say all this. This is like the future of what supercapacitors and electric cars look like. Now, I personally buy into the idea that I really, really, really feel like I still don't think supercapacitors are the golden bullet, silver bullet that we want it to be. I really think that there's going to be a long-term strategy where there is no single technology that answers all of our power needs, because all of these different battery types and power things, they all work in, I think they can work in concert. And I've been saying this for years. People think I'm ludicrous.
Saying it for years.
I know.
10 years.
Yeah. I've been saying it.
I did skip out a word, so you may have missed that Independence Day reference.
Yeah, Randy Quaid, thank you. And that's why this is a safe for work podcast.
Clean
podcast. Some people would be saying, how does that make it? You guys are ridiculous, but we are careful.
Lifetime habit.
How do you say?
Choice.
I don't know. I think what's going to happen is you're going to plug in the car and I think you'll have like a backup lithium ion battery chunk or some sort of a chemical battery that will help regulate.
Did you say jump or chump?
Chunk. A chunk of your battery. Of your battery, of your power, will be a battery. A chunk will be supercapacitors. A chunk will be how it recuperates and the circuitry that kind of balances and works with all that together. I think there's just a lot of different solutions here that can really, 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 as an engineer, as you engineer these different technologies. The thing is, and how I want to wrap this all around is, this is a very exciting technology, this graphene technology. You're definitely going to see it incorporated more and more. It's sort of like the carbon nanotubes of 2010s. Everybody got all angsty about carbon nanotubes because they're like, the future of everything is carbon nanotubes. Well, like, it's taking longer for all that to pan out than everybody wants because there's no easy way to manufacture long strings of them. If you could make a foot-long string of a nanocarbon tube, I think everybody would be stoked. Well, the problem you're going to have in here is the same thing. Of graphene is one atom thick, and so if you can't get to the point where you can mass produce these things at volume and at cost you're not really going to see these graphene supercapacitors go anywhere. But what's very exciting about this is that realistically, you can. They're making some big, big headway. That's what all these articles are. That's the undercurrent of all these articles that people are missing out on, I think, when they talk about supercapacitors and stuff, is the research that these guys are doing isn't how to build supercapacitors. The research they're doing is how to mass produce graphene in a very affordable, effective way. And they're flexible, which is very cool. So they're talking about how like they basically will make a sheet. You have like these super sophisticated lasers that will etch out exactly what you want it to be. You can prefab these things so that you just peel them off, slap them together, put them in a package, put them in a, you know, so it's one of those things where there's definitely a lot of work to be done. Don't expect this to be in the next revolution, revision of your phone, but in the next 5 years, it's not ridiculous to think that, these types of supercapacitors will be graphene supercapacitors, starting to hit the market and starting to, you know, compete with, like, you know, nickel cadmium batteries and actually, like, you know, continue this jaunt forward. The thing is that, and this is what's really exciting, there are other supercapacitor strategies out there that have even higher energy densities than these graphene ones. These graphene ones aren't necessarily anymore, or they're not any more impressive from an energy capacity perspective than other supercapacitors. It's just their manufacturability is so easy, and graphene is just such a, it could be a, such a great future material that right now it's very exciting. But I still think that we are on this, like, we are on this hunt to figure out the supercapacitor. And very realistically, in the next, you know, next 5 years, I think you're going to start to see the very beginnings of supercaps getting incorporated into consumer level electronics. So I don't know. It's exciting. It's very exciting.
I agree. Totally agree.
Yeah.
Let's talk about something less exciting, and then we'll flip it back to something more exciting.
Okay.
You know, we gotta change the tempo.
Yeah.
Otherwise. You know, you like to do in concerts. You know, you can't just do big song after big song. You gotta kind of mellow it out a little bit.
It's all about the narrative. Yeah.
Exactly. Exactly. So to do that, let's talk about the brand new Chrome Pixel.
Whoa! Chrome what? Chromebook Pixel?
Chromebook Pixel. Sorry. Yes, you're right.
We have one pixel, but we have chromed it, so we're all good.
It's all good. It's all good. Harley buyers around the world are going to be flocking to us to get the Chrome fix. So, Google has come out with a new, can we call it a laptop? Is that allowed?
I think it is a laptop.
Okay.
It just has a different operating system. It is clearly a laptop. It is a ridiculous laptop.
Good. Yeah. Just making sure laptop's one of those general words. I mean, they call it a Chromebook, but it's a laptop. And so so it runs Chrome, which is essentially a browser.
Yeah, essentially.
And so that's the operating system. Anyone, you guys all know what that is. And the big difference is a couple things. First is that Google is making it, and they're you know, so it's their own branded thing, very similar to the Nexus line types of things. It's got some impressive specs. The screen is 12.85 inches. The screen itself is actually a touch screen that is it's very dense pixel density.
I'm gonna say, let's get to the clutch. The thing is called Chromebook Pixel.
Okay. Yeah, so it's 239 pixels per inch.
Wow! That's a lot.
It's a lot.
Yeah, it's a tremendous amount.
Yeah, it goes, you'll never see another pixel in your life.
Yeah.
And
that's much higher than your Retina displays. That's ridiculous. That's like...
Yeah, it's up there. And so, almost over the top up there. But, you know, they did it, so there you go. So they've got this. Oh, it's got the screen itself is Gorilla Glass. From what I understand, it's a very, very, very good quality build. And they're like, it opens nice. There's good action on the keyboard. The touch pad on the bottom is glass. I don't remember seeing what the battery life was. I'm guessing that it's fine. It's got like 4 gigs of RAM in it. And... you can do multiple 1080p videos at the same time. It's got the Wi-Fi, the Bluetooth. It's got a 720p webcam, some dual microphones. And they actually have another microphone down near the keyboard to try to cancel out typing noises if you are talking. Yeah. I was like,
If you're doing a podcast and you try to use your keyboard, need that. That's
or my guess is that they use their huddle feature all the time, and the keyboard typing is annoying, they can't the solution.
They've noticed the same thing we've noticed, which is it's obnoxious.
You're not allowed to type.
During podcasts, which does make things kind of difficult sometimes. Now that I have the iPad, I can just... You can't hear me typing. It's great.
Awesome. So it's a Wi-Fi model, which will come with 32 gigabytes. And then they'll also have an LTE model, which will have 64 gigabytes.
Yeah, which
and then
why would
they're
you get
also
going to
have a full 1 terabyte storage on Google Drive.
Right.
And you'll get that for 3 years, apparently. So,
how many years?
3. I don't know what happens after 3 years. So
probably have to pay for it again.
Yeah, I guess. Which is no big deal. And you can do the data plan for $10 a month. Whatever. So, and you wouldn't care about having to pay again for the Google Drive data because in order to buy this machine, you plunked down at least $1,299, and it could be as much as $1,449.
Well, let's be real. If we're gonna pay for this thing, I'm going big. I ain't going home with a $1,300 Chromebook. I'm getting the $1,450 because that thing is ridiculous. And
for an extra $150, you get twice
LTE
the storage
and twice
LTE
the storage
capabilities.
Yeah.
Makes sense.
Yeah.
So, let's just recap this real quick. Google has made what I would argue is a very nice machine from a spec standpoint. It's got a good touchscreen. It sounds like the components are a good quality build. It looks like an amazing machine that they put Chrome on.
Yeah.
A browser.
That's really the hiccup in this whole thing. It is a beautiful piece of hardware, and especially the screen. Okay, and for the record, I looked it up. The iPhone actually has a higher pixel per inch count. The iPhone 5, the iPhone 5, and actually the 4S and the iPod Touch, the fourth generation, has 326 pixels per inch, but the MacBook Pro with Retina display 15-inch is only 220 pixels per inch. So it's very comfortably a much higher for it's one of it
it's
is the highest
display.
Yeah. And it is like, you know, as far as laptops are concerned, it's very high. I mean, it's crazy. That is so clearly where they're spending most of their money on this thing.
It's kind of funny. I wonder too if they did it just so that they could drive that knife into Apple. Oh, look at that. You can no longer say you're the highest res.
I honestly think that's what it was. Like that's what this whole thing strikes me as, because it actually harkens back to the original MacBook Air, where the original MacBook Air was very thin, underpowered, small screen. It was tiny, and it was ridiculously priced. It was just crazy. Everybody was like, why would I get this? This is just dumb. And then one year later, they had this precipitous drop in price, and they basically replaced the MacBook with the 13-inch MacBook with the MacBook Air and the MacBook Pro 13-inch. And from a price and capabilities perspective, and it just all of a sudden it was like, wow, okay, now this makes sense. To me, this is a flagship attention grabber. It's almost like they put it at this price just for the sake of grabbing your attention. And
it generally cost them to make that much, and they knew they wanted to make it. So,
well, yeah,
they don't care. Like,
exactly. They're not trying to sell these. What they're trying to show you is we can do hardware. The Chrome can work beautifully with great hardware, and you know, and everybody's comments so funny because they're like, why don't you spend that money, get a MacBook Air, and just download Chrome and then go into full screen mode, and now you have both operating systems. And by the way, you can also get Windows for your MacBook Air. But that's besides the point. but what I think is going on here, my opinion is they want to do high end Chromebooks. They've been beating this path of the Chromebook is a very cheap laptop, which everybody goes, you know what else is a very cheap laptop? A tablet. You know what else is cool about that? It's not a laptop. bless you.
Sorry.
And so I think Google is coming up
with
this.
Sorry to all the listeners.
Yeah. I think Google is trying to
muted it.
Probably. It's trying to come up with this.
I couldn't do it fast enough.
I could have said the God bless you and just like totally stolen it from you. I think Google is trying to. Google is trying to change the the perception of the Chromebook as this just, it's an operating system for cheap, cheap, cheap computers.
Agreed. Totally.
And because they've already got a cheap, cheap computer operating system, it's called Android, and it's doing pretty well. And you know, especially when you have like your Nexus tablets. So I think they're just
I look at it too. I mean, they're making moves like this, which to me totally fuels that rumor of them wanting to do a retail store, because that's the only way they're going to sell this thing.
Right.
Okay. No one in the right mind is going to buy this online. You know, you look at a $250 Samsung one or just a $200 Acer one, you know, for that amount of money, you know what? I will buy one online just because I need a cheap one, and sure, why not? But if you're going to spend in excess of $1,300, I am going to play with it and test it. You know, you were that same thing about apps, right? Dude, for a buck, whatever, I will download it, and if I hate it, it's not the end of the world. If I'm going to spend $10, I would really like a demo of it.
Yeah.
And, you know, and this one, it's the exact same thing, right? Just on a bigger scale. For $200, I'm willing to take a risk, maybe. But for $1,300, no. No, 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 no. I want to play with it. And I want to know there are real people who can help me if I have a problem because I spent $1,300 on a computer. And I think that's where, you know, they're going to have a store and they'll be able to showcase machines like this. And they'll be able to inspire companies like, you know, like HP that came out with one for $329 recently, to have HP go, you know, why don't you guys think about making a high-end one for us as well? You know, let's really try to spread your risk. Look, it can be successful. Look, we made sales. And
a month ago, a $400 Chromebook was expensive. Today, a $400 Chromebook is cheap. I think that is a big part of the idea of building high-end Chromebooks, is to set the expectation so high. You know, it's the reason why Apple made the 128 gigabyte iPad with, you know, with Retina display. You know, they create, it's the reason the MacBook or the Mac Pro exists. It is designed to be expensive, to set the, you know, what's that marketing strategy where you got like the super high end, you got the super low end, and you expect everybody to buy what's in the middle?
Just classic three-tier pricing strategy.
There we go. And I think that they're coming up with a three-tier pricing strategy. They know that there are $200, $150 Chromebooks out there, and they know they're pieces of junk. And now they're setting the first tier up so incredibly high that you can start to move into the middle ground, and now all of a sudden an HP Chromebook that costs $400 or even $500 or $800 doesn't sound as ridiculous. And Google is basically saying, we paid all this development, we don't expect to recoup the cost on it. We're, you know, this is just a great, you know, we're just selling these and we'll make whatever we make and we're not going to worry about it. But I think it's just, I think this is a big part of your marketing strategy. And actually, the other thing that I think that they're not getting very much credit for, which they need a lot more credit for, is the Wi-Fi range on this thing is just insane. It's like the best it's the best consumer Wi-Fi range that you can get. They have like a dual band antenna built into it. They've got like, you know, they like looked into like where to place it. So the Wi-Fi range is just huge, which is important when you're talking about a Chromebook. And the Wi-Fi chip in the mobile device is usually the weak point. You know, it's like, you go in.
Well, I mean, it's an internet machine, so it's got to be.
Exactly.
So here's what I want to know. And unfortunately, I have to cut this short because I really want to get to the next topic, and we only have 20 minutes left.
Okay. Go for it.
So I got one last question. So when are you getting one?
A $1,300 Chromebook?
Yeah.
Never?
Never? Okay. All right.
When I become a millionaire, I'll get one.
Oh, okay. Got it.
I don't have any need for it. I don't have any. Okay. If I own a house, a nice car, and I have $100,000 in the bank, I'll get one. I don't need to be a millionaire.
$100,000 in the bank. Yeah. All right. Fair enough. We'll just wait until they come up with a retail store right next to you, because they will.
I have anything to say.
Then you can play with it.
Exactly. And I'll give you my full review after playing with it for 5 minutes.
Yes. So, nice. I like it. So we have time for one more topic, and I'm pretty sure we're going to have trouble fitting it into 20 minutes, but we are going to try because I have to leave in 20 minutes. Okay. So, that is where we're at. Google had another announcement this week.
Yes, they did.
I don't know how to say it other than I'm not quite ready to pay $1,500 for them, just like I'm not ready to pay $1,300 for a Chromebook.
Yeah, but you are. But
I am
way
more likely
ready
to pay $1,500 for this particular invention. So, just out of curiosity, did you see the video that Google put out for Glass?
Glass. Yes, I did.
Okay, Glass. Yes, you did. Very cool.
Tell me about
it. So they put out this video, They put out this video that shows like what it looks like through Glass, and you can watch them, you know, using it, and it looks pretty cool. And then in addition to that, and I'm just going to kind of paint the high picture, and then you can decide where you want to dive in. Joshua Topolowski from The Verge, he got to spend some time actually playing with it and learning about it, and did this massively long update along with a long video that talked about it and, you know, what it is and what it isn't, stuff like that. And then just so happened to coincide with all of this, a Mr. Mark Zuckerberg happened to be in the same place as a Mr. Sergey Brin, who always wears his glasses. Yeah. And they said that in the middle, I don't even remember where they were. They were at the University of California, San Francisco's Mission Bay Medical Campus. And they were doing something. And
I love all the particulars.
Like in the middle of it, Zuckerberg literally like went over to go try them on and check them out. And was like, awesome!
Yeah.
And they said, like, ironically, the founder of like the biggest social network and sharing thing was like, no, please no pictures. This is a private thing.
Yeah.
Which we're like, whatever, dude. Way to be hypocritical. But anyways, but they shared a moment, and from everyone's description, they're like, Zuckerberg is pumped about these glasses and was asking all sorts of questions and can I do this? Can I do that? What about this? What about that? And, you know, and Sergey was like, oh man, these are all good. Yeah. Yeah. And Zuckerberg was like, I literally have three engineers sitting around waiting to get a pair of glasses so we can start developing for it. Because that's how pumped we are right now. And so there's kind of like Glass happened this week again.
Yeah. Yeah.
So Google came out with this video and in some ways it was just like amazing choreography on their part. I also just think part of it was, you know, just PR luck. They come up with this video that shows you, here's what it looks like from your perspective. They have a very highly respected tech blogger get to use them and do a very, very nice write-up about them. Just talking about, okay, you got to see the video of here's what it looks like, where it's got the little pop-ups, it's not bad. You got this guy's perspective who you trust saying, here's what it's like to wear them, here's what some of my concerns are, here's how it actually feels to have it on. You know, and then you have this other tech luminary who's just like, this is awesome.
Yeah, yeah, he's pumped.
He's like us with $1 billion and the ability to actually do something about it.
Yeah.
Which is cool.
Yeah, $1 billion. That's laughable, James. You mean billions of dollars. I'll say I'm pretty excited. I love
it. So what do you think about it? Okay. I guess, you know, what I want to know, you know, is I'm just going to assume that if you don't know what we're talking about, you should probably stop listening to this podcast or – better yet, we'll have the links in there where you can watch the video that Google did and on that Verge one, they also put together a video so you don't have to read the long write-up that you could watch them interacting with it and talking about it. So there's that. What I really want to know is like, what do you think of it, man? I mean, let's just say, first of all, if price wasn't an issue, would you wear them? Would you use it?
If I had $1,500 lying around, yes.
Okay.
Yes. Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. Cost okay. isn't. Okay. Right. But why?
Okay. All right. I'll tell you why. when the iPad launched, we weren't doing this show. But if we had been doing this show, this is what I would have told you. There's this dude. He's the lead singer of Talking Heads. He did a TED Talk, one of my favorite TED Talks of all time. And he talks about the history of music in relationship to the venue and the idea of how sound echoes and how, like, how the types of songs changed at the advent of the radio because they sound different, or how, you know, one of the reasons why dirges were so popular during the, you know, 1400s, because everybody sang in churches and the only way to get the sound to pass was long, low tone, notes. And so just talking about how the idea of creativity filling the venue. Basically, if you open up a venue with certain characteristics, people will create stuff to fill that venue, quite literally. And when the iPad launched, you know, and a lot of times people build venues without having any idea what kind of music is going to go into it. Or they'll build a venue thinking, oh, we'll play this type of music. And everybody's like, that music stinks in it. So somebody creative comes in and they take over. The iPad, when it was launched, Steve Jobs said, this is what the iPad is for. We've built this venue and we've filled it with these things. And the reaction that everybody had very early on was, that's stupid. Why would I use that for that? I already have these other venues that work better. And I was like pulling my hair out going, you guys don't get it. This is a new venue. This is an opportunity for creative people to do something new that's never been done before. It's a blank canvas. It's completely different. This is the most exciting thing that's happened in like the last 6 months because technology moves ridiculously fast. but it's one of those things, and it's like the iPhone. The iPhone was another perfect example, especially at the advent of apps, because it opened up the canvas. It opened up this new venue, and you think people's, you know, people, it's so funny listening to people like talk about it on the news. They're like, oh, you're gonna have this thing in your eye. What happens when you get a text while you're crossing the street and you get hit by a car? You know, like, oh my gosh, you guys are giving me headaches. I just want to, oh my gosh, like, you know, you guys are so unimaginative, I can't even stand it. See, the thing is like with this piece of hardware is, it's like, yeah, okay, it's first going to come out. And you're going to have everybody talking about, like, okay, glasses. And anybody who wears it is going to have these $1,500 goggle, you know, pair of glasses on. So it's going to be like, it's going to be a status symbol. It's going to be like not very useful when it first comes out, but everybody's going to be stoked about it. Everybody's going to want to see it. Everybody's going to want to try it on. It's going to be like having the iPhone back in 2007. Is that one was 2007, yeah. And where it's that same sort of, I don't get that group.
I've gotten cheap since then.
Yeah, exactly. It's like I don't. You know, like people will be like, why do I need this? What is this for? And you're just,
dude,
like,
that's
well,
what they
it's
gotta
really-
do. They gotta figure out how to put a wireless device in there so that we can sell it on contract. Oh, get it subsidized.
Yeah.
It doesn't work that way.
No, I know.
But yes, I was pumped to see that it does connect to an iPhone via Bluetooth.
Yeah,
that was exciting.
It is exciting. So this whole thing is, and this is what it is they are opening up for the first time, and this is the other exciting thing. Unlike the iPad, where people like got it and were like, for the first time, imagining what would I do with a touch panel in my hand that I can carry anywhere. Well, and that's not true, totally true. We've been thinking about it for a long time, especially UI features. But what to actually do with it, we hadn't really thought about. We're like, oh, yeah, I guess we can do this. And just look how fast people got into it and how pervasive they are all of a sudden. And that, there's a lot of different reasons for that, from pricing and availability and, you know,
So just out of curiosity, have you adapted your iPad into, you know, your life yet so that you could never live without it?
I've had it for a week. Mostly. Yeah, I use it at work all the time, like for work. It's pretty cool. It's useful. Yeah.
I'm kind of hoping that my Pebble watch becomes kind of like that, where after I've had it for a while, I'm like, why would I have a regular watch? This thing is amazing.
Well, I wonder my iWatch to be like that.
Yeah, and I wonder, you know, if these glasses will be that way, where, you know, you wear them for a month, and by the time you know, at the end of that month, you're literally just like, I don't want to walk around without it. This is now a part of my life and who I am. You know, it's funny too. They talk about in the article, the thing about, with computers and the internet, like spam became this big hated thing because email, believe it or not, was this very personal thing where, you know, because it was so close to you and in your face and it was your spot. And then they talk about how phones became even more personal because it's like it's in your pocket. It's a part of who you are and you take it around with you and, you know, you watch over it. And there's these devices that are becoming more and more personal and a part of us. And now here you have this device that is literally on your body. And unlike a watch, I mean, it's literally on your face in front of your eyes, you know. And they talk and they're like, this thing's going to become intensely personal, you know, which you're like, it's very interesting to think about that and go, wow, you know, you know, and they were like, design's going to be important, color's going to be important, because this is going to represent you and who you are and the functionality and the connectivity of it. It's just, you know, if you start getting spammed with this, oh my word, you know, I don't know what you'll see happen.
Yeah, people will get crazy. So listen, I want to go full circle here. Okay. When I was in high school, the most exciting, and I actually didn't say this earlier because I knew where we were going. I've read the script. What I actually really wanted, I wanted cochlear and ocular implants so that I could have a computer in my brain, so that I could literally be sitting and listening to music, playing video games, and I actually want to, and this is the final step, is I want to be able to control the mouse with my brain, which you can do with cybernetics, which is really cool. You can plug it in, and so I can just sit there and operate a computer, the interface being ported directly into my ocular nerves, directly into my ear-eal nerves, and controlling it with my brain. And to me, this is pretty much it without the surgery.
Getting close, which is nice.
Yeah.
Convenient.
And exactly. I'm sign me up. And, you know, and the thing
if
is,
you look at it that way, this is cheap. Why didn't you buy it?
But yeah, exactly. But you know,
doesn't cover it.
I'm still not sold on the fact that I want a pair of glasses instead of implants because I got a soft spot in my heart for implants. But
of it as a demo. You're just trying it out. You know, exactly. See if you really want to take that next step.
Exactly. And I have a feeling I know what the answer is. I'm going to be a weird 80-year-old.
So the other thing that they talked about with it, what they were talking about was the reason why they decided that this had to happen was people were constantly grabbing in their pockets and looking down at their phones and like missing life. And that was, so they came up with is there this way that we can prevent people from having to look down so that they can actually enjoy the world we live in? And so they came up with this glass idea, and I thought he asked a good question. He goes, does that mean, you know, there's inherently something wrong where, or is our society so messed up that in order to get people to look up and interact with the world and with others, we literally have to augment their reality for them, otherwise they won't do it.
Okay. Somebody would call that messed up. I might call that incredibly awesome. I don't know. I'm just saying. You know, and it's funny. I got called out Thursday night. I was out hanging out with some friends, and I got briefly distracted by my phone. I have the attention span of a 3-year-old child. Like I can't. It's terrible. But And I was sitting there playing, and it's funny. It's like my thought there was, God, I wish I could have just been playing through my brain. I hope neither of these people ever listen to the podcast, and there's a good chance that they might. So I say this in full acknowledgement of it. But there was that moment where I was sitting there going, God, I'm bored. and like which is terrible because they're really cool people. I really like hanging out with them. It was like a 30-second little clip, but my reaction was to turn to my phone and to re-stimulate myself. I'm sitting in the middle of a bar. There's live music. We're playing games and talking, and I got bored and decided to turn to my phone. I don't get it. Well, but I do get it. It's just like there's such a rush of stimulation all the time, and I don't know. That's an interesting question. What does it mean about us? What are we doing to our brains? What are we doing to our social lives by doing this? And you know, it's like on the road, I have to constantly
preventing
remind
myself. Alzheimer's. That's what we're doing.
Yeah. I have to
keeping
constantly
the brains active.
Remind myself while I'm driving, especially in traffic. Oh wait, you're not supposed to surf Reddit right now. You're supposed to pay attention to the car in front of you. Like and because I just instinctively pick up my phone, flip on the app, and I'm like, what am I doing? I'm driving. and if I can now pay attention and drive, you know, and yet still surf Reddit, I'm not any less distracted. Just my eyes are on the car in front of me, sort of.
So that'll be interesting, right? Because I think about that example. Okay, sure, your hands are not being used, but your brain is definitely being distracted
exactly.
by something else. And you can't multitask. So I don't think, you know, and what I, you know, when they talk about, you know, like talking on your phone while driving, they're like, honestly, you shouldn't even be doing that with a headset on. You
right,
should not do the
distracting
two.
Part. Yeah.
You know, but it's also interesting, though, is you were talking about how you got in trouble, you got called out for looking at your phone. When I watched the video of him using it, you can tell when he's looking at the device. And so it'll be interesting to see, is that something where you learn how to not move your eye and look at it and just read it through your peripheral vision? Or will you still just get in trouble? And that'll be even worse because it'll be so hard to be like, I'm not going to look. I'm not going to look.
Well,
I'm not going to look.
There was a discussion I was reading where they were talking about the idea that, you know, the obvious answer is when you go on a date, you take off your hat, you take off your glasses.
I guess that's that too.
That's, you know, yeah, exactly. Well, and that's what's so funny is everybody was like, what do you do on a date? It's incredibly distracting. Or when you're with family and everybody's like, you do what you always do with technology. You turn it off and put it in your pocket. And because it's incredibly rude to play games while you're out with friends. And that's the thing is like, I will just have to take it off, turn the power off because
funny. Okay. I guess that is a solution.
You know, because you need to be able to unplug. And of course, the really frustrating part about it is once I decided to not play with my phone anymore, I re-engaged. I actually disengaged and drifted over to the phone because I was disengaged. The phone made it very easy to continue to be disengaged from what was going on. So to turn back to what was going on, all I had to do was turn the phone off or put it back in my pocket. And actually, all I did was set it down on the table.
I think points to just a whole different thing, right?
This is
kind of weird in the sense that it's supposed to be solving a problem, but in reality, it's not going to do that either.
I think it's exaggerating the issue, and I still think it's incredibly exciting and great, but that's the point. What they're trying to do is they're trying to tell you what this new venue is for, and I think they're wrong, and that's what's so exciting about it. It's going to be for something completely different, and they don't even really know yet what it's for.
Well, what's cool about Google is that they are they're at least smart enough to know that it's going to change, and they're totally willing to
feel
it out.
They're not like Apple, where Apple is more apprehensive to that, so things don't move as fast with Apple. Whereas with Google, you know, Mark Zuck is going to be like, I want to do this, this, and this, and Google's going to say, go for it. Sounds great. Let's try that. You know, and so that's what's so exciting about Google Google developing these. But I don't know. I'm scared.
It's gonna be cool.
The future.
It's gonna be awesome. And that is our show for the day. Hopefully you found it exciting. I know I did. Honestly, we could go for another hour, I'm pretty sure, pretty easily. But unfortunately, I have places to go, people to see, things to do. That is my Saturday. So everybody, thank you for joining us. I am James Furlow, and my I always forget, man. I cannot forget. I cannot
Something about my futuristic brother, I think is what I went with.
Is that what was futuristic?
Yeah, okay.
I kept thinking like it has to do with the Oscars, but we didn't even mention it, so why would I even think that? There you go. I think I was watching a College Humor. I think I was watching a College Humor video about the Oscars, which is why it's there, which was hilarious, like most of their stuff. Anyways, my name is James Furlow. My futuristic cyborg brother is Matthew Furlow, and we will talk next time. I need to remember to write that down ahead of time, you know, when you do it, so that I don't have to do that awkward pause in the middle. Unless that's
it is kind of fun when you're like, it's becoming a thing where like almost every show you're like, and this is my, I don't remember.
It's my something. He's my brother. I know that, but there's more to this. All right. Well, I'm not writing it down. No. Very cool. Hey, man, have a great rest of your Saturday, and we will, like I said, we'll talk next time.